Thank you, everybody. All right, let's move on to case agenda items 8B, 10, and 11. They are related, and so I'll ask Mr. Elliott if he'd like to come up and maybe give the background on both of those cases. We'll still take them as separate motions, but since they're connected, it makes it easier to talk about that.
Makes my job easier, too. Good morning again. The board received this complaint alleging that the respondent was hired for an engineering project in Goodyear and failed to deliver the required documents in a timely manner in accordance with the contract. It is further alleged that the respondent invoiced the project at a substantially higher amount than agreed upon. Board staff received the case for investigation, and in it, the alleger states that he entered into a contract with the respondent and paid him $21,042.25 for the project. After reviewing the contract and invoices, he found several discrepancies and possible overcharges. The alleger states that the respondent added $10,096.50 to the original price. In addition, alleger complained about the amount of time it was taking for a respondent to complete the project. Alleger said that he lost the contract with his client as a result of the delays the respondent caused during the project. Board staff received a letter in response to the board's notice of investigation from the attorney representing the respondent. The attorney was in California, and if you'll recall, back in October, I came before the board and requested or brought a memo to the board. She was requesting PROACT EJ. The board did approve that, and so she was able to represent him then from California. At that point, I did officially speak with Ms. Chang regarding the case, and she told me that she'd interviewed all the folks involved at the firm and looked through basically the documentation provided. She provided all that to me as well. Ms. Chang determined that part of the reason for the delays the alleger refers to was because the city of Goodyear was taking many, many weeks to get back to the respondent, and I guess or get back to the alleger as well. This was also during the holidays in November and December, and the respondent was in the hospital during part of that time as well. Ultimately, respondent wound up facilitating a meeting. Apparently, he had a relationship with folks at the city of Goodyear to resolve the issues. This involved Mr. Lessard, or Lessard, who is the respondent in the other case that's attached to this one, case number P24091. And I'll get into that in just a moment or when it's time. But essentially, Mr. Lessard went then with the alleger representing the respondent to the city, and they came away with apparently what they needed to move forward with the project. Ms. Chang determined in the end everything was submitted to the city. She provided documentation of that. However, the alleger's client went bankrupt, and she provided documentation of this as well. And the property was going to be foreclosed upon, which is the reason the alleger lost his client in her assessment. Ms. Chang said her research of the respondent's company and files and interviews that she conducted did show some clerical errors with regard to the billing. And so, that was passed on to the alleger, and he was reimbursed, and she provided a canceled check and conversation with the alleger. He also acknowledged that he had received reimbursement for the amount of money, at least it was determined to be, it was different than the amount he originally alleged, but it was apparently acceptable, and he acknowledged that he received that.
Want to address how those two cases are connected? Just for clarification.
Sure. So as I stated, essentially Mr. Lessard in case P24091 accompanied the alleger to the city of Goodyear to meet with them to try to move this process along. During the drive over, it's alleged that Mr. Lessard overheard a conversation that took place between his case, responded in this case, and responded in case P24090 about the, a different project that they were working on, and that there was approximately a 30, I'm sorry, it was a conversation between a ledger and another individual. I'm sorry, yeah, it was a conversation between the ledger and a different individual, in which the ledger essentially said, or made comment about making, or there was going to be a $30,000, I guess, profit. And so from that, a ledger believed that the additional $10,000 that was charged to him was because respondent in this case and respondent in P24090 were in cahoots, in collusion with one another to essentially take money from him because he was flush with cash, or would be. I was not able to substantiate that in any way. Speaking with the respondent, he said he barely remembered the conversation and certainly did not remember the contents or the what was spoken about. It wasn't his business. He didn't pay attention. And I was not able to substantiate that.
Thank you, Shelley. Or any questions? If not, entertain a motion to dismiss both agenda items 8B10 and 8B11.
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I'd like to propose a motion to dismiss items 8B, 10, and 11, P24-090 and P24-091.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Do we have a second?
Sure, this is Jack Gilmore. I'd like to second that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Gilmore. Any final discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion passes. All right, last item, we go back to the top, which is item 8B1, case P25-013. I don't know if Mr. Al Trump is on the line or not. I don't know if anyone can. If not, then we can just go ahead and make a motion to dismiss.
I don't see him online.
Chair, this is Jack Gilmore. I'd like to make a motion to dismiss item 8B1, P25-013.
Thank you, Mr. Gilmore. Do we have a second?
Bill Nesgut, I'll second that.
Mr. Nesgut, any final discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. That closes out agenda item 8B. Let's go ahead and move on to agenda item 8C. We have two complaints proposed for offer of consent agreement. We do not have anyone in the room or virtually who is looking to speak to those. So if the board is okay with that, we could make one motion to
Ms. Chair. I apologize. C2 has been signed.
Oh, it has been signed. Yeah. Okay, so we'll move that one down to with 8D1. So, okay, thank you. In that case, we will take those as separate motions. So we'll entertain a motion to offer the consent agreement for agenda item 8C1.
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. I make a motion that we accept the proposed agreement encompassing the following order and not signed within 30 days. Proceed to hearing, claim reprimand, administrative penalty in the amount of $200, cost of investigation $119, and that's for HI 24-026.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Do you have a second?
No, Mr. Chair, this is Mr. Lindsay. I'll second the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Lindsay. Do we have any final discussion?
Mr. Chair, just I want to make clear, is the motions to offer the proposed consent agreement? Is that what would be
correct? And if not signed within 30 days, we proceed.
Okay, I don't have any other questions.
Okay. Good double check. All right, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion passes, thank you. All right, then in this case, we have now two complaints proposed for resolution with signed consent agreement. That would include the formal, I guess it's still agenda item 8C2, case P25-039, and also agenda item 8D1, which is case P24-039. Interesting that they're the same case number, just 1 year apart. Quite the coincidence there. We'll entertain a motion to accept the signed consent agreements for both cases.
Mr. Chair, this is
Bye.
All right. Mr. Chair, Scott Sales, I propose a motion to accept the respondent's signed consent agreements for P25-039 and P24-039.
Mr. Chair, may I speak?
Yes, who is this?
This is Alan Shelton, the complainant.
Okay, yeah, we had you listed down here available if the board had any questions. We were just about to get to that, so. But okay, if you have something you'd like to say in addition to being available for questions, yes, please do.
Yes, I'm just curious about this consent, which I was not party to, so I don't even know what this consent agreement is. And I know they have not made it right by me yet, so I'm just curious as to what the consent agreement is and what it means when you accept that.
For me?
If the board were to accept this consent agreement, you would receive a copy of it as the alleger in the case, and you would be able to see the order and the stipulations from there.
And then the case would be closed?
Correct.
So a guy, you have no say in this whatsoever?
Mr. Dunn.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, if I may, it might be instructive for the board. This is a question that comes up from time to time. As the board is a regulatory body and not a civil litigation forum, complainants are not parties to a complaint in the way they would be in civil litigation. A complainant files a complaint, but the board regulates licensees, so the board simply proceeds on the complaint and then exercises a regulatory function. It is not here to act as an adjudicator between parties, but rather to act as an investigative body and then determine if there's been a violation of board statutes and rules. Bringing a matter before the board does not preclude anybody from bringing the matter to any civil forum. So for example, somebody could complain about a licensee to the board and then proceed with a civil action as well, in which they would be a party. But the purpose of the board is not to represent a party in any action between parties, but rather to exercise a regulatory function over licensees to ensure that they are practicing and meeting practice standards as required by Arizona statutes.
And I understand that and appreciate it. My question is more, in some of these previous matters, you had complainant and respondents present to basically discuss their case. I was never involved in that process. I was never given an opportunity to explain what my position is and what went on here, so I'm kind of curious how you arrived to any sort of a consent agreement.
Again, Mr. Chair, any consent agreement is between the board and a licensee for the board, for the licensee violating board statutes and rules. Typically speaking, a complainant is part of the investigative process, but only to the degree that the investigator utilizes them as an investigative resource. They're not a party to any settlement or involved in reaching a consent typically with the board, with licensee, and they're not a party to that consent. That is between the board and the licensee being disciplined.
So I guess my next question is, why did I just waste nearly 2 hours of my day listening to this meeting when I have no voice? I could have been getting my work done.
I mean, if you have a further opinion, Mr. Shell, you want to offer, I mean, you've got your hand raised there.
Yeah, this case came before the December board, and the investigator Carthel can explain more into.
That's what I was just about to say. Since Mr. Carthel is there, why don't you share that along with any interaction you may have had with the ledger in this case?
So. Certainly. So as Ms. Lillard had mentioned, this case came before the board in last month's meeting in December. And at that time, the board and the involved parties that were present for that meeting discussed the case. The board came to a conclusion, gave staff direction to write this consent agreement, and gave us particular things that they wanted in that consent agreement. After that meeting, we drafted the consent agreement, offered it, or proposed it to respondent, and in response, he agreed to it and signed it. A ledger was involved, was invited to both the December meeting and today's meeting. In both cases, Alleger was asked if he would like to address the board or if he wanted to just be available for questions. In this meeting, he indicated that he wanted to just be available for questions. And so he had been communicated with in accordance with our statutes and rules and policies.
Thank you, Mr. Carthel.
Mr. Chair, so just so he was invited to the December, the Alleger was invited to the December meeting?
Yes, sir. We send out invitations by regular mail and email.
And additionally, this may assist in answering the question as well. The board does conduct all of its business through open meetings, and members of the public are allowed to watch the board exercising its statutory authority, and certainly the board staff takes steps to make sure that alledgers are aware of where the board will be reviewing something, so that they would have the opportunity to watch the board exercising its statutory authority with regards to that investigation.
Thank you, Mr. Donald.
And I do recall the December meeting, but I don't recall at any point discussing any sort of consent agreement. And I understand that you guys are not in charge of any legal action or anything along that line other than discipline of the license. And I totally understand that part of it, but I would have thought that I would have been a party to this consent agreement as well, at least to review it.
Yeah, no, only the consent agreement is between the board and the respondent, not with the alleger. So just for clarifying.
Okay.
And one other thing as well, Mr. Chair, that may assist with this. Due to the board's confidentiality statutes, typically board staff wouldn't be able to engage with an alleger in the way that, for example, attorneys would in civil litigation. So there are actually statutory bases for not being able to provide certain information to an alleger that is discovered through an investigation, and that would include not only EAC information, but potentially information contained in the consent agreement.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. Mr. Shelton, we do appreciate your coming before the board today. We do have a motion on the table to accept this signed consent agreement along with agenda item 8C2. Final discussion by the board before we exercise that vote.
We'll need a second, Mr. Chair.
Who seconded? I think Scott made the motion.
I thought Mr. Nesbitt did, but maybe I. Okay, I apologize. So, Mr. Smith, you are seconding
Mr.
that motion.
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith.
Yeah, I'll second that. Okay, I apologize. We've had so many motions today that start to blur together. All right, we have a motion and a second. Any final discussion? All right, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Ms. Clinton?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, that motion passes. Thank you.
May I ask one last question before I hang up and let you guys carry on?
How
do I find out what the disciplinary action is if I'm not involved in this?
Since the board approves the consent agreement, you will receive a copy of it via email and mail.
Now I am a little confused because you told me that I was not a party to that, and now I'm going to receive a copy of it, which has already been signed.
And Mr. Chair, this just to clarify, once the board takes legal action, then files and confidentiality may change. Prior to the board taking legal action, the board may not be able to disclose things, but now that the board has reviewed the consent agreement and accepted it through taking a vote, now the information is available to the public, and so our board staff would now be able to send you a copy of the consent agreement. It simply cannot be shared until it has been approved by the board due to confidentiality provisions.
So you should be receiving that, Mr. Shelton, shortly. So we appreciate you coming forward to the board. Thank you.
Appreciate it. I just wish I hadn't wasted so much of my time today, but thank you.
All right, let's move on to item 8E1. This is one that requires board guidance related to case P24-040. I do believe that, Mr. Gilmore, you said that you were going to recuse yourself from this vote. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Thank you, Chair.
Is there any other members that need to?
No,
All right, so we have one board member being recused. All right, sorry. Let's go ahead and move forward with this one. Ms. Crawford, if you would please.
Certainly, and I will try to be as brief as possible. The board received a complaint alleging that at the time of the Southwest Cancer Facility proposal, on or about February 14th, 2021, respondents' registration as a registered architect had lapsed. It is also alleged that there was a partnership between PH Architecture and Pinnacle Design, and that respondent was a member of AIA and a member of NCARB were false statements and led to Southwest Cancer Center hiring respondent and Pinnacle Design. It is also alleged that respondent drafted and developed architectural plans for the project and submitted the plans to third-party contractors for price bidding while his registration was lapsed. It was also alleged that between February 2021 and June 2021, respondent held himself out as a registered architect through correspondence and displayed the title of Architect Emeritus without having valid registration. After speaking with alleger and respondent, it was determined that respondent's registration did unintentionally lapse and was canceled on 4/27/2021. Respondent provided a timeline of employment and indicated that he has not held a position in which he stamps or seals, or that it would be required for him to have valid registration since his registration has expired. He stated that for this project in question, he was one of many team members that worked on the design of the project and executed the proposal. Both the alleger and respondent indicated that he was not the architect of record on this project. Respondent was a bona fide employee of the firm during the project and, per a letter from the firm principal, was working under a registrant. The terms used within his email signature line may or may not be defined or regulated by the board. Respondent did provide marketing materials to the clients referencing his former firm. The materials did list the firm name and reference to architectural services. Respondent indicated that the materials referencing his prior firm were to past design imagery only. With the materials provided in the packet in front of you, board staff is seeking guidance on how to proceed forward with this case.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. I'm not sure if they are online, just so that Mr. Hayes may be online, available for questions, but it says he may not, so I'm not sure if he is available or not. And then in addition to that, we also have available to answer any questions the board may have, Dr. Andrew Latchman, Ms. Denise Salisbury, and Dr. Hemet Sinhu, who are the project owners. I don't know if any of them are online. Again, they haven't asked to speak, but they are available for questions. I want to start this discussion with, and I'm going to look to Julie here for a second and Judith. To my knowledge, Arizona does not have an architect emeritus status. Some states do have retired architect. We are not one of those states.
We are not one of those. You're correct.
So my concern, of course, is when anyone holds themselves out as architect emeritus, not everybody necessarily knows what that is. It creates confusion among the public and obviously ambiguity, which we try very hard to avoid. Understanding that Mr. Hayes, was not stamping any drawings or taking design responsibility for those. However, I am still a little bit concerned about just that holding someone out to be an architect. But I would like to hear from the rest of the board if other folks have thoughts and opinions on this.
I'm Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. Yeah, looking through the documents, it's very close in my opinion. There's a lot of, inferences, but I don't see that any of the words used tied to items in Arizona Revised Statutes that would preclude someone from using some of the various different acronyms and abbreviations and other things in there, but it does lead one to it. The only one I got is RA. I don't know what RA stands for. What is
in
it?
Our profession, most architects will put either AIA, which is your member of the American Institute of Architects, or RA, which is a registered architect, which typically means you're not a member of the AIA, which is a professional organization, not a licensing body, but that you would be basically registered architect, RA. So again, that along with the architect emeritus is where I have some heartburn again, because it does provide confusion. However, I also don't believe that was intentional in that respect. Person, I'd be open to offering a letter of concern, which is not disciplinary action. But again, I want to open that up to the board for other opinions. Hearing none, I will make a motion, I guess, that to offer a letter of concern in case of P24-040. And we'll entertain a second.
Mr. Chair, to understand if I'm going to do a second, what would be the motion? What would be it, like in the letter of concern text to why it would be a letter of concern?
And the letter of concern would be related to the use of Architect Emeritus and the acronym RA at the end of the current Pinnacle Design letterhead and signature bodies that Mr. Hayes uses, which again creates confusion and ambiguity for the public.
All right, well, in that case, Mr. Chair, I will second that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Any final discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Ms. Klein?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion passes. All right, our last item, and I have to give a big shout out to our landscape architect board member for bringing not one, not two, but six registered landscape architects to join our enforcement advisory committee membership. We have been sorely needing more landscape architect members on the EAC, and Mr. Gilmore, I have to say, shout out. I don't know how you did it, but that's quite a collection of great landscape architects to join our ranks. Any you'd like to add as far as those members, or feel free to make a motion?
Chair, yeah, this is an easy recommendation for me. I know all of these. And they have a lot of experience in Arizona in working for all kinds of projects. So I think they'll be a great resource for the Enforcement Advisory Committee. And with that, I'd like to make a motion that we accept the interest of these members to be Enforcement Advisory Committee members representing the profession of landscape architecture. That's item F1 through F6, 8F6.
Mr. Gilmore, do you have a second?
Bill Nesgood, I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Nesgood. Any final discussion? All right, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Ms. Klein?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, that motion passes. Absolutely. If everyone's okay with that, why don't we take a 5-minute break? It's a good time to do that. We just closed out our enforcement matters. We'll continue with 9A through C when we get back. It is currently 10:54. Let's resume at 11 o'clock. That's good. Thanks, everybody. All right, just to make sure, Ms. Klett and Dr. Campbell, if you just confirm you're both back on.
I'm here.
Here.
Excellent, thank you. All right, we're going to resume our business here. Courtney, do we have the respondent's attorney on the line?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, then we'll go ahead and we're going to come back to one of the enforcement cases. And I apologize if there's an individual in the audience here, Trevor Pan. Is that correct? Okay. Who did want to address the board relating to agenda items 8, 9, 10, and 11. So we're going to reopen that, but we're waiting to get the respondents on the line. So let's, in the meantime, move forward with our policy matters. And let's go ahead and start with agenda item 9A, which is the Mills case, which I do believe we have an update that Mr. Donald would like to share with the board.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we do have an update. We won.
Because you have a little.
Certainly, I can expand a bit if you would like.
That would be wonderful, yes, although the two-word answer is always nice, too.
Certainly, that is, for the record, the shortest answer ever given by an attorney. Yes, the case has been won at the Supreme Court. The case was dismissed. The case brought against the board. As a result of the board investigation into Mr. Mills for the unlicensed practice or holding out or practicing as an engineer without licensure. That, of course, now brings us back to the point we were before the litigation commenced. Actually, I believe it will bring us back to a point shortly after the litigation commenced. Once the litigation commenced years ago, the matter was brought back to the board. So I believe where we are presently is now that the civil litigation has ended and is final, we are back in the investigative phase, at the tail end of that investigative phase. Now, what will happen is the case will now be re-looked at by the investigation team, as there have been some changes in the past 4, possibly 5 years since this initially came in before the board. So I will, the board will see this again on an agenda under investigation cases. I do not know what status that will take at this time. And we'll be happy to answer any questions. Okay.
Jack might be the only individual in this room that was a part of this when it initially came to the board.
Which makes him a board member emeritus.
Again, we're making up titles here. So, all right.
So we don't know if we have jurisdiction yet, though, right?
I do not believe that analysis has been conducted yet. The next investigation team meeting, I have no doubt that will be reviewed.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
All right. So as many of you know, over the years, many board members have suggested topics for future board meetings, and Kurt has done a fantastic job here in our board packet of agenda item 9B, kind of providing an update or status of each of those items. Not necessarily have to go through these one by one, but Kurt, if you have any sort of just broad overview or anything, any hot buttons you'd like to share with the board, feel free.
Just so the board's aware, we keep a spreadsheet of anything that is requested, and we do track it, and we try to bring it back to the board or somewhat, you know, resolve it through whatever means that we can. And so this was just requested by board members to, you know, what's going on with these? And so we just wanted to provide a synopsis and kind of where we think as staff is where these items are. So we're just hoping that the board members can review it, kind of give us an idea if they agree, if they wish to have further discussion, if, you know, just kind of where they think it is as well. And we'll try to do our best to maybe answer questions or have it for a future item to discuss.
Right, and whether it's today or future meeting, I mean, the point is this is a list that is ongoing in perpetuity to keep track of the things that you ask for.
No, that's great. Does any board member have anything specific you want to talk about?
Sure, Mr. Jack. The very first item was incidental practice, and I know this has been a hot topic for many years. I guess I get concerned when I see the service matter resolved, and I think we're far from it. There are some I-Corps sessions coming up that I've signed up for, and I know all the different professions are giving this a lot of scrutiny right now, trying to determine how they define the overlap. That's still in the works. So this is far from resolved, I guess.
Right, and I guess to be clear, I think that we were more talking about showing that video because we had a couple of failed attempts on that. So you're absolutely right, Jack. Incidental practice is another ongoing, and the I-Corps organization is absolutely, yeah, we can touch on that some more in our association report. Yeah.
Very good. Very good point, Mr.
Yeah.
Mr. Sales, anything?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Scott Sale. So not just on this, but maybe just a new item for topics or tracking with, and it spurred my thoughts earlier about these seals being used by these other, these websites or other places where they're using someone else's seal without their knowledge. Is there a way to tally up to know, you know, kind of how many cases over the last couple of years have kind of fallen under that, where we've had to make those decisions as a board to, you know, advance something to a next stage? I'd just be curious to know what groups are out there, and there's a lot of fine groups out there. I don't want to disparage any of them, but just to, you know.
So, Mr. Sales, just to clarify that, I mean, there's the use of fraudulent seals, but I think what you're referring to is the newer issues that we're encountering with like Fiverr and Upwork and those online platforms used in fraudulent sales. That's we can look at what we have right now. I know there's more that is in the pipeline. I also know that nationally that's something that is closely being watched to the point that there's thoughts about each jurisdiction, at least with the engineers and surveyors organization, to have a data dump, you know, in a national place so that it would be easier to turn over to whatever enforcement body could possibly pursue something that's crossing every jurisdiction and international.
Okay, yeah, you know, whatever's possible to collect. I know there's a lot of protections and stuff in there, what we can and can't be shared, but whatever it will tally up to just understand that, I think that would be better, because it's digital world out there, and seeing what was happened here with the seal from someone else grabbing it with, it's unfortunate, but we gotta protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public.
Any other items?
Sure. I know this has been discussed quite a bit, but this new legislation that we're all having to live under now has allowed a lot of these violations to be dismissed, where I think it's most unfortunate. I know there's going to be an effort, I think, in the near future to try and restore some of that overview by the board. I'm just curious, what is the process and where does the board stand on documenting some of these cases that are slipping through?
Well, it's actually in the director's report, there is a new slide that actually indicates all of those cases that are currently there. So maybe we hold that conversation till we get to Judith's excellent executive director report and we can talk about that.
I can't take credit. That excellent additional graph point comes from Orlean and enforcement, but I am grateful that it is part. But we are on, I mean, this is kind of a mix, right? We're talking about future agenda items, which is actually on the end of this agenda, but that's what this whole update is on, things that we've already had. So maybe if there's something else that anybody wants to add that's not a part of this great list that you have already of things that we're looking at, we could talk about that when we get to the future agenda items to add to our list.
That was going to be my suggestion as well. So,
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. You addressed all of the items that I always had listed, so thank you very much for that. And I am not going to mention pay to play.
Okay. You just did.
Okay.
All right, well then let's move on with our legislative updates, item 9C. Kurt, you were going to cover that one? By the way, excellent job on the spreadsheet again. Although, maybe a two-pager might be good because it's really tiny. So.
So, it's relatively early in the session, so there's a lot of bills that are being watched that haven't moved yet. Kurt's got it up for me there. I mean, I don't really have a lot of detail that I personally want to go into on anything except for HB 2200, which of course would have tremendous, wonderful impacts on the board if that could be passed the way it is. It would allow us to more readily accept, you know, reciprocity, the MRA agreements that are in place, people that have national council records. It would just expedite things tremendously. And as part of that, I could just maybe offer a tiny bit of history. The previous director did try to get reciprocity language years ago, but it was at the same time that the previous administration was pushing the universal licensure, and so it was all shot down. So this board really has never had any language about reciprocity or an expedited way for people to gain licensure. So not only would this additional path create that, but also it also would encompass the MRA mutual recognition agreements that are now in place with the National Architect and Engineer Surveyor Associations, and it won't be long before the National Landscape Architect Association puts that in place as well. So there's a lot behind it, and it I mean, we all want it, because it would just serve our registrants tremendously. So, yep. House Commerce Committee, 2 o'clock today, if anybody's interested in attending.
And it's Representative Wilmeth who is the sponsor for that legislation.
Yes, thank you.
So, great. Thank you, Judith. Thank you, Kurt. All right. So I want to go back to our enforcement cases. And again, I do apologize to Mr. Pan, who has been very patiently sitting in the audience there. He was not aware he wished to address the board. This is in relation to agenda items 8B10 and 8B11. Those are the related cases. And if you please come forward. The microphones, like Kurt mentioned, are walkie-talkies. You have to push and hold down on the button. It'll turn green. But if you could just state your name and your position on this case as the alleger.
Yes, so my name is Trevor Pan. I'm the alleger against Erie and Associates. I'm a bit dismayed that the case was dismissed, but at the same time, I would like to discuss the value of making a complaint. I did not first just leap to the board with this matter. But, I first tried to work with Mr. Erie, via email, calls, and that sort of thing. Basically, he had submitted reports that said preliminary, as if they were complete, and billed as if they were complete. There was a number of items in the contract which he never even provided a preliminary report on. And when I brought this up to him, I don't know, it took a few times. I remember one day, this is pretty much extortion, he says he had added $10,000 to the value of the contract. And we had a signed contract, if I remember correctly, it was $30,900 or $600. And, you can't just unilaterally change the contract. But he adds like 10 grand, or I don't have the figures in front of me, but he says, well, you want us to finish your project, don't you? This is what he did. And at that point, I realized no amount of talking on my part, no emails, nothing sort of work. So I had to go to the next level. The next level was hiring an attorney to draft a letter, which all these documents are, you can review them if you wish. And if I remember correctly, after he received the letter, he sent me a new bill for $2,500 more, or some amount. It was, in that sort of range. So I would, I brought this matter to him, first as a professional, right? Then I went to an attorney, and he one-ups the situation, right? And I had laid out in the letter, I had told him what I was going to do, because at that particular point, my client was in financial troubles, which I only learned later, but he had transferred the project. He told me that he had sold the project to this other person, but I later found out that that was like his indebtor, or the person who owned the mortgage or something like that. But he wanted to advance with the project, that new client, right? The new client paid the remaining balance. And so we advanced, and we were going through the City of Goodyear. And, but anyway, I want to get back to the letter. So in the letter, I stated, hey, you've overcharged for these elements. I think at this point, by the time the attorney, I'm a little foggy on dates, but by the time the attorney letter was written, I think the project was pretty much kind of dead, because this had gone on for like 6 weeks. We weren't producing drawings. And it's by the good graces of this new client who didn't pursue the project that I didn't get hung up to dry on this thing. I mean, it would have been really bad because Erie and Associates never provided final drawings, right? And so, anyway, in that letter, I told Erie and Associates, hey, you know, you overcharged for $6,500, I think $6,572 or something, but I want this money back, you know. And because these are for line items that they were never delivered on. And in fact, he even added line items to the contract later. He added items to the contract. This is a criminal, in my opinion. And so, when he submitted that like third invoice, which was for even more after the attorney letter, that's when I realized that this man was not somebody I could work with, and that was not going to come to reason, right? I had to bring him to heel some way, but the amount in dispute, $6,500, it's $3,000 more than small claims court, right? It wouldn't even be worth hiring an attorney to go after it, right? So how can you hold someone to account in that situation? For, you know, it's a fair amount of money, $6,500, but at the same time, it's not worth civil litigation. And while yes, you can bring a lawsuit, there's a cost to that, right? And so, I finally made the complaint with the board, and eventually that is what caused him to pay that money back. It's the only reason he paid back that money, I can guarantee it, was the only way. When you're in this $3,500 to probably $30,000, I would estimate, when you're in that range, the only way you're going to get another professional that you can actually hold their livelihoods on the line, is through a board complaint. And so today I found out, actually I do remember, Mr. Elliott over here sent something about a loss of jurisdiction. I need to research this more so I understand it better, but I just want to state that it's because it's that you're here that we can hold these ill-acting individuals to account, right? Because not every case is going to be a slam dunk in civil court. You know, if you're up $30,000, man, you could easily spend that with an attorney. And what are you going to get back, 25 or something? I mean, I don't know. But, so... I guess my statement here is that I really value the fact that I could bring a complaint, right? In this case, I think it's the only way I could have held him to account, and that they were dismissed. They at least had to face that music. And my feeling is that both of them had worked other architects like this in the past. And this is my feeling. I don't have proof of this, but just the way they were doing it and the extortion. And then later, I would like to add one thing. I couldn't remember the attorney's name, but Mr. Elliott said it. The attorney, Chang, for Joss Lessard, she called me one day, and she asked me, is there any fee left that we could pay you back to, basically so you would drop the case? To me, that seems like a bribe, because one, Trevor Van Architects PLLC is not contracted with Joss Lessard. So that was a pretty serious thing. I felt like, I said no. Obviously, he made that choice, Joss. And I'm sorry if it's a little jumbled, because it's tough to just come up here and, you know, relive all this. But let's see, he's P24091. He knew about these overcharges, and he did nothing to the owner of the firm, P24090. So that's how I felt like they were working together. And they had worked for years, 20 years as a small firm. I could see how individuals could determine, hey, you know, this, let's go after this company, let's extort them, let's, you know, get what we can. Because they never expected that I would actually follow through with coming to the board. Right? But me, I didn't just leap to the board and, you know, say, oh, I'm going to smash you down. No. I did it successively, a little stronger, until it came to a point that there was nowhere else to go.
Pan, we appreciate your comments. I do believe we, I'm not saying that that individual wishes to speak, but I do believe we do have Ms. Chang, the respondent's attorney, on the line. Ms. Chang, I don't know if you want to respond to any of the comments Mr. Pan made. You don't have to, but it's your option if you so choose at this point.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to address the board. I have submitted on behalf of Mr. Erie, and not Erie and Associates, I do want to make it very clear, the complaint was against Mr. Lin, Mr. Erie individually, against his individual license, and Erie and Associates is not a party to this complaint. And I will if the board has any specific questions, I would like to take the opportunity to address any specific questions the board might have. I will provide a summary comment about some of the things, very inflammatory and potentially defamatory and defamatory comments that are made that are unsupported by the documents submitted in connection with the complaint. And the totality of what we have submitted to the board, which constitutes the entire client file for this particular project, you will see the amount of work that was done. And there's nothing that would come close to extorting or some kind of conspiratory or any criminal conduct that Mr. Pan is alleging without any proof before this board. So I want to make that clear. What we have submitted to the board that the investigator has reviewed, he has come to the conclusion that this matter should be dismissed, and not based on any assumptions or conclusions, but based on the amount of evidence before the investigator, which is also before the board. The response provides a detailed chronology of events. And I will point out that Mr. Pan hired an attorney who was specifically hired solely for the purposes of drafting the demand letter. That was the scope of his employment by Mr. Pan. When I contacted his attorney, he said he is not to, his scope of employment has ended, and that he had nothing further to do with the demand letter that was sent to Mr. Erie on February 22nd. That was delivered, which was delivered to Erie and Associates office on February 22nd. And I'd like to note that Mr. Pan submitted the board complaint on the February 28th. So essentially giving Mr. Erie less, approximately 2 days to respond to his demand letter. I also would like to note that Mr. Lessard has reached out to Mr. Pan only to discuss the issue regarding invoiced amount, to which Mr. Pan said, I filed a board complaint so you can deal with it through that process. I have separately had a conversation with Mr. Pan, and that is true, but it wasn't on behalf of Mr. Lessard, it was on behalf of Mr. Erie. I wanted a confirmation that he has indeed received the refund, which is a disputed amount. Erie and Associates calculated potentially a lower amount is at dispute, but just to put this behind us, Erie and Associates was willing to refund the full amount that Mr. Pan demanded in the demand letter, and that amount was provided to Mr. Pan. Mr. Pan did acknowledge during my phone conversation with Mr. Pan that he's not owed any additional sums in his opinion and in his calculation according to the contract. The comment about Mr. Erie or his business has engaged in extortion, what I'd like to, and that Mr. Erie has added unilaterally some changes to the contract, and all of that stems from Mr. Pan's misunderstanding and his one-sided interpretation of the contract. The contract is before the board, and you will see that each of the estimated amount for the various tasks that constitute the contract, when you sum up all of the estimated costs, and again, it's an estimate and not a firm number. It wasn't a flat fee arrangement. It was time arrangement, but an estimate was provided, which when you tally it all up, that amount was $36,000 and not $30,000. And there was that clerical error that led to Mr. Pan's misunderstanding that there is a overcharge of $10,000 plus or so. I think those are the highlights of some of the key misunderstandings and key factual differences that are supported in the respondent's brief as well as supporting evidence presented. So unless there are any other, and I do want to note that Mr. Erie has a clean record. There are no complaints of similar nature that includes fee disputes or otherwise. And I think it would be a real missed opportunity not for me to clear up Mr. Erie's long history of being an exceptional engineer. And he has spent his entire lifetime here in Arizona helping many, many clients and has a stellar reputation. So I wanted to put that on the record.
Thank you, Ms. Chang. Does any board member have a question for Ms. Chang?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. Thank you, Ms. Chang, for joining us on the phone. Just looking through the documents, I did see the item where the totals don't, total shows 30,900 when it should be, I don't know, somewhere up 37,000 in there. I'm just trying to figure out, at some point, was that figure out, oh wait, we did the wrong number, and was that conveyed? Or was it only found out at the end when all this information went back and forth that, okay, this the total for A plus B plus C was wrong on that first page?
That correction was made sometime later. I have to look through the brief to identify for you the exact date of when that correction occurred.
Okay, no, that's fine. I just wanted to confirm that yes, it was found out and notified, and yeah, it's unfortunate that it's summed up improperly there for those items. Okay, I don't have any more questions, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
Mr. Smith, I do have a question. I know we voted on it already, but. Aren't we supposed to be real clear on invoices, and then if there's going to be a change to it, should there be communication prior to the work being performed? I mean, isn't that one of our biggest rules or whatever? And I didn't see anything in here that says, yeah, we're going to be doing this for a little extra.
Maybe Ms. Chang can respond to that question.
Yes, there's no allegation in the complaint, just so we're clear, that there were these changes. If you look at the complaint, The complaint does not allege doing extra work. This is what Mr. Pan is stating for the first time before you, but the complaint does not allege that. None of the work that Mr. Erie and his company performed were outside the scope of what was included in the contract and later on invoiced, submitted in the invoice statements to Mr. Pan. Does that answer your question?
It does, thank you.
Any other board questions? Sure, briefly if you would please.
Yes. What I would ask of you is to please refer to the last few invoices when line items were added. Thank you.
Mr. Pan, thank you again, and apologies for the confusion on you coming to speak before the board. I take responsibility for that, so I apologize.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you, and Ms. Chang as well. I have not heard anything personally that is going to change my vote, but if there is a board member who feels otherwise, we can reopen the vote, or we can stand by the vote that has already been cast. Mr. Donald has a legal issue associated with that.
I was just going to say that if any member feels that there should have been a different resolution, there would need to be a motion to rescind the earlier vote and then a new consideration.
And Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. Looking through, well, hearing from both parties here, I don't see anything that raises to the level of gross negligence to, for me, want to try to reopen this case from what we previously did. So that's my discussion.
Unless any board member speaks up, we will follow that. Thank you, Mr. Pan, for coming in. Thank you, Ms. Chang, for speaking as well before the board. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for your time.
All right, let's move on with the director's report. So, Judith, the floor is yours.
Why, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sorry, I just want to raise whether the most recent vote includes Mr. Lassard's complaint as well.
We dismissed both cases, so that action stands on both cases.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All
right. Okay, now to the riveting discussion of budget and other fun administrative topics. So I was able to meet with Central Services Bureau and our financial analysts, as well as the Office of Strategic Budget Planning, or OSPB, budget analysts to go over some projections and current revenue and expenditure issues that we're looking at. Right now, even with the additional 15% being taken out of the board's revenue and going into the general fund, we are still solvent. Although, as we watch what budget is we're looking at being left with at the end of the fiscal year, it is getting pretty tight. Right now, the projected ending allotment is $26,000 and change, which, if you think about our overall budget, that's not a lot. And part of those unexpected expenses have been Gould Technologies. So when we were talking with Rick earlier, I really emphasized that with our OSPB budget analyst. I said, when you allot us appropriated funding for an online transition, but then the company that the state dictates that you use cannot accomplish what needs to be done, and we're forced to hire a third-party contractor, and it wasn't just our agency, it was many agencies in the state. All of those funds weren't anything that were projected or anticipated or received appropriated funds for. So that's a significant money issue for me that I'm looking at closely.
Judith, is that under operating? Is that where you put it as, for that charge?
It would be under professional and outside services, because it's an outside vendor that we're contracting with.
Okay.
So the financials that you're looking at there, Mr. Smith, are just the actuals with no projections in it. So I can include the projections if you want. There's so many variables that happen on that. I don't know if But if you would like to see that, I can include both reports in the future.
I think that'd be helpful, Judith. Just like in our own businesses, we project out what our revenue and income might be, knowing that they can change. It just helps us know whether, especially knowing that we've only got less than $27,000 at the end of the year, that does those projections could be very valuable.
Right, and there's actually multiple pages of financials, but the best ones for you to look at are these summary reports. So I can do summary report with no projections, summary report with projections. I can do that. And then, speaking of money, because the next thing on the list is the online transition. So I mentioned earlier that we really need to wrap this up this fiscal year. So when we started talks in 22 and we received funding in fiscal year 23, and then some work was done, but it was never completed. I guess if I can just kind of sum it up, we have a set amount of funds that have been carried over to pay for this transition that won't cover all of it, but a significant chunk of it that will revert back at the end of this fiscal year. So if that happened, I mean, they either need to give us a bigger appropriation to cover it or a special appropriation, it would be kind of a mess. So right now with the carried appropriation from the last two fiscal years and 27,000 and change out of this fiscal year to cover the cost when we do go live, and that 27 and change has been estimated in the projected ending allotment that I just mentioned. So I think that we will be able to manage that. And I should say also that is with a discounted amount because the project has gone on for, you know, years beyond when it was supposed to. So the next payment, let's assume we go live in May, the next payment in the next fiscal year would be probably, don't we figure, Kurt, about $150,000, because it's a snapshot of the current licensees at that moment at a rate.
I would say that's fairly accurate, maybe like $145,000 to $150,000.
So the discounted rate that we're getting is about $128,000, $130,000-ish. So fun things to think about. Board staff, we still have a couple openings that we are trying to wade through resumes and fill, one in operations, one in licensing. Board composition, I am in contact with boards and commissions, and I believe that they've done a few interviews, but I haven't heard anything, so I don't know who's been appointed until a letter lands on my desk. And so if anybody knows of anybody that's applied and they want to let me know, then I can follow up. But otherwise, I don't know if anybody's applied or not. And then we've got our correct licensing numbers. Thank you to Board Member Smith for pointing that out. You could update that report. That was my error. And most important for me is the enforcement reports. I mean, I'm just extra excited about it because Orlean added the new one this month. So all of the reports are excellent. But if you'll notice on page 7, Orlean has broken it down by profession, all of the cases that are being dismissed purely for lack of jurisdiction under our new law that took effect just in September. So we'll be well over 30 after this meeting that couldn't even be considered by the board. So it's kind of shocking.
That's very helpful information, Judith. Yeah, let's keep tracking that one, because it is eye-opening to see that. Anything else?
I don't have anything else unless you have any questions.
I can't tell, Kurt, if you're raising your hand or okay. Go ahead.
We just have a raised hand in online from Mr. Branch.
Yeah, are you guys done speaking or touching upon complaints and cases?
Yes, we've already covered all those.
Okay. I was invited to this meeting to discuss my case, and I'm sure Brandon was online earlier as well. Was there a mix-up, or did I miss something?
Mr. Branch, your case was dismissed.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to make sure I clearly understood that. Thank you.
No, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
All right. Mr. Donald, does look like you have an Assistant Attorney General's report. Unless, okay, so we'll skip that one. Let's go ahead and move forward with the association reports, and we'll start with ASBOG.
Nothing from ASBOG right now.
Anything from Clark? Jack?
No, not really. There's a I-Corp session coming up, and they've got some quarterly seminars that I'm listening in on, but nothing that really affects what's happening with this board.
I am meeting with CLARB's CEO, Matt Miller, the beginning of February. We usually do an annual meeting together.
I don't have anything to update on NCARB at this time. We will have more next month.
So the only thing on NCARB that I thought Julie might want to mention, or I can say what, I'm like, Julie, NCARB launched their new reciprocal transmittal to all of the state agencies in December. And I asked Julie, how's that working? How's that affecting us? Because on my NCARB MBE communications page, it is causing some distress in other jurisdictions. So I wanted to defer to Julie on that.
Sure. Yes. So we've only seen a few of them so far, I would say, but it's a much more condensed version of the record from what, you know, previously had been. So it's very much a snapshot of, you know, registration, exams, education, and experience, which so far hasn't been an issue for us in verifying that they meet our registration requirements. A challenge that I could see long term is they don't spell out the exact dates that someone passes the exams. So if Arizona is verifying exam information for another state, reciprocity in another state, we wouldn't have the exact dates to verify. So that would be a challenge.
Might want to put that in the recommended version 2.0.
Yeah.
Version,
if that's
great. It's very much similar, I would say, now. It looks like a CLARB record, just like 4 or 5 pages versus maybe 40 pages of a record.
Clark, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. All right, Dana and Scott, anything on NCDS?
Nothing new from servers.
All right, on the engineering side, just the next upcoming meetings in May for the NCS. And then just on the NCS has finalized their mutual recognition agreement with the United Kingdom. And those states, there's a few states that are lined up with how that works to participate. So I've heard that's going well, so that folks in the United Kingdom can more easily come to the United States to work, and vice versa. So they're assisting there on the pathways to licensure. So anyway, that's just the update on that. I don't have anything else. We'll know more after the main meeting.
I do.
Always do.
Yes, I do. So NCEES flew all of the MBAs, that's me in their world, out to their headquarters for a meeting that was fantastic. There's nothing more productive for me than getting in a room full of my counterparts in all the various jurisdictions. And it's loud and it's very busy and you learn a lot, which is wonderful because that's very helpful. So one of the kind of more ridiculous discussions was that it's ridiculous that they refer to us as MBAs when every other national organization says MBE. So I don't know, there might be a motion on the floor at the annual meeting for that. So I know that's just silly, but they went into great depth about their examination service committee and the development, the content, the number of committee members involved in that, the psychometric vendors that they use to facilitate the exam. I mean, all of it, security. it's just amazing because they have so many. They've got 7 fundamentals of engineering exams. They've got 12 standalone professional engineering exams. They've got 5 subsets of civil, 3 under electrical, 4 under mechanical, and of course the multi-section for the Big Kahuna structural engineering exam. And there's so much that goes into all of that. It's always fascinating. On May 1st of last year, they launched their interactive practice exams for the fundamentals exam. They have seen a tremendous increase in the pass rate since they've put those practice exams up, which is, I should give a shout out to NCAR because the architects did that first and saw an increase in their pass rates as well. So that's such a helpful thing to do for people that are looking to take those exams. There was, Dana, you'll appreciate this, there was a lot more discussion, continued discussion on the progress of the future of the PLSS exams, including all the discussions on the colonial jurisdictions versus those that are essentially west of the Mississippi. The colonials don't need the public land issues, they just need the boundary survey things and who's going to require what. So that continues to be quite a heated talking point. And they want to emphasize that the PLSS is not and never will be a substitute for the professional surveying exam, just an addition to for states that would need that knowledge to be with their surveyors. Also kind of exciting, they have created a professional land surveyor virtual headset that will be available in February to help students understand what it's like to be a professional land surveyor that you can check out if you're doing an event. They also have a drone simulator that they will work with any jurisdiction to have accessible. So it's pretty nice. We spent a lot of time with the NCWS International Engagement Strategist and the ongoing international focus beyond the United Kingdom. Very exciting. A lot of discussion still about jurisdictions trying to incorporate that MRA and how that will help tremendously with the need for skilled labor and the shortages that most jurisdictions are encountering. I think about Arizona and the tremendous growth in high-tech industries that's booming here and how much that might be able to help the state to incorporate that. Also opportunities for just knowledge sharing and as well as trade and commerce development. Important note to remember, because this did come up already when I was talking to a member of the legislature, that utilizing the MRA or the MRA agreements does not in any way change the United States visa or immigration laws or regulations. So there's nothing to do with that. The honor cords are still a tremendous success, and they handed out almost 800 just for the 100 participating schools for December's graduation. So very popular, as Julie and I took some to ASU for an event a couple months ago. The students, they're really excited about that, so it's very motivational. And then we have a meeting coming up with a representative from NCES to review their ELVS, which is Engineering Electronic Licensing Verification System, and how it might be able to benefit our board and have a API handshake possibly with Ventia, and where that might go, not sure. So super exciting stuff there with NCES.
You were definitely busy in that meeting, so. Well, to round us out there, Judith, anything else on I-Corps other than what Jack already mentioned?
I-Corps is, we are still meeting twice monthly, and yes, they've got a schedule. They are working on a prototype of a cleaner view of what would be the ultimate end document for everybody to look at. Their 2025 work stream, they've got things set up to finish the definitions, review again in February any acceptable overlaps so that those aren't points that really need to be even fleshed out, go over scope distinction with things that do and then just complete that final document. So I do expect to see something or be able to share something with the board this year.
I think we're all eager for that.
And that's it. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. As far as suggested topics for future agenda meeting, or sorry, future meeting agendas, Mr. Sales already mentioned about the seal fraud used by online platforms. Are there any other items any board member wishes to add or staff to a future agenda? We've already talked about next month, talking about the adjustment to the July board meeting, so you've got that captured.
Dr. Campbell here. I have one or two things, actually.
Yes, please.
One item is directly related to Mr. Sells' discussion. Anyway, so the first one that I'd like to discuss is the impact of recent legislative changes on board investigation and case dismissals. Discussion points such as potential risks to public protection, operational enforcement challenges, stakeholder and industry concerns, and how the board should respond. And then my second item that would add on to what Mr. Sells was talking about is the contemplation for exploration of board-managed electronic stamps and seals for licensed registrants. Discussion points, current risks and security challenges, and then our potential solutions, regulatory and legal considerations, technology and cost analysis. I think it would be wise for the board to contemplate what it would look like and what type of software would be required in the future if the board was to issue and manage a registrant's electronic stamp. In other words, the board could issue it, it's active, it's in use. If it was misused, the board could take a particular stamp and make it no good anymore, using software, and reissue a new electronic stamp. And, if there was misuse or anything like that, the board could inactivate a stamp, activate a stamp, suspend it, whatever the case may be. And then that would, allow the board to have a little bit more control, on how these things are used out there. And again, I know there's feasibility and cost issues, and we would have to know the legal parameters and how that would work. There are companies, third-party software options that we could probably investigate. And I know that that's probably long-term. Again, I don't use a stamp in my profession, and so I will naturally defer to the esteemed members of the board who do, and whether or not you feel that would be good to add into the discussion that we'll have. And that's all. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Dr. Campbell. We'll definitely put that on the list. Anything else? All right. Our next board meeting is same time, same place, February 25th, 2025. And with that, we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting at 1 minute before noon.
So,